You are listening to the Slow Living Podcast, and I'm your host, Stephanie O'Day. What if I told you that you could truly have the life of your dreams, the life you've always wanted, one filled with abundance, joy, and a sense of purpose? It's absolutely possible, and I see it each and every day with my coaching clients. It all starts with learning how to slow down. You deserve to live the life you've always dreamt about. Let's get started.
Hi there, Steph here. You're listening to the Slow Living Podcast, and this is episode 130.
I am thrilled that I have Sandy McDonald on the show today. And Sandy McDonald is the co-founder of the IAPMD.org website. And IAPMD stands for International Association for Premenstrual Disorders. It was founded in 2013 as a collective resource to share information with fellow sufferers of PMDD. And Sandy is the co-founder, and I'm so thrilled that she's here. So Sandy, thank you for being here. And I would love for you to share a little bit about your story and how this organization got developed.
Thank you so much for having me, Stephanie. It's great to be here and be able to share and talk about all things PMDD. My story probably dates back to my first period, like most people that have menstruated. I started off having a lot of struggles and a lot of issues around my cycle and couldn't understand what the issue was, and, you know, started going through things in high school that, not typical things. I was, I would basically go through really tough times, probably cyclical. It wasn't happening all the time. So, you know, you start to have some of those ups and downs. So a lot of mimicking bipolar type behaviors. And back then, you know, which was quite a while ago, don't want to date myself, but, you know, like age-wise, that was a long time ago, and PMDD wasn't a thing. Nobody talked about it. It was all about, you know, PMS. So it was, you know, I had really bad PMS all the time. And so started, you know, going to doctors and trying to go through some things and, you know, started with self-harm, a lot of cyclical type behavior, eating disorder type behavior, binge eating and stuff around my cycles, and still not getting anywhere and not cluing in that there was something wrong. And, you know, continued on that trail. My doctor had put me on birth control when I was quite young to see if that could regulate my cycles, but I was still struggling and having some issues. So, fast forward a little bit to university and started, you know, learned how to drink and, you know, started binge drinking and doing some things, you know, some other things, risky type behaviors that are not, you know, I shouldn't say not typical of a university student necessarily. However, you know, it became excessive, and the eating disorder ramped up, and some of the other, you know, the self-harm ramped up and continued to get worse. So as I noticed myself aging, a lot of things were worsening. And my first suicide attempt was in high school, but I actually made a more severe attempt in my university stage of life, and came out of that again. And then fast forward to my next stage of life, which was, you know, I, you know, settled down, got a job. I tried to settle down, because obviously cyclically every month there was issues and things going on. And I started getting being given, antidepressants, SSRIs, different medications from doctors, and asked for a referral to psychiatry, because I thought really that there was something severely wrong with me, because this was happening all the time. And went through, misdiagnosis of bipolar. That was the first diagnosis. Went through the medication treatments, and nothing was successful. Birth control still was not working. Things were just not working. And I continued to move on in life, worked, had a hard time holding down jobs, had a hard time just with life in general, but still functioned. You know, I would do really well for so much of the month. And then I would basically go off the rails for a period of time and then pick myself back up. It was the exact same cycle over and over and over again. And so after I became a mom, You know, you start to get lost in some of that because you're not focused so much on yourself, and but still was spinning out and had got severe postpartum depression and postpartum psychosis, and had a really horrific experience after having one of my children. And luckily enough, I was put into care of a psychiatrist that finally listened and finally believed me, and just you know, explored some of the things with me and spent some time with me. And after the baby had turned one, that's kind of when you're supposed to be let out of that service, because it's no longer postpartum according to them, but things were still happening. And so I started doing a lot of my own looking and digging and trying to figure out what in the heck is wrong with me, because this is happening all the time. This has been going on for years and years and years of my life. None of the medications, none of the treatments, none of the therapies, you know, I did everything imaginable. I did, you know, Western medicine, I did pharmaceuticals, I did coaching, I did, you know, pretty much anything that you can think of on the market, supplements. I did absolutely everything. And just nothing was working. So with her help, you know, we made some discoveries, and at the time it was still called severe PMS. There was an old paper that she had found, research paper that she found, that talked about PMDD. And then I myself started Googling things for PMDD and trying to find things. And, you know, Facebook was becoming a really big, huge thing at the time.
Yeah.
And I was a mom living in an isolated small community. And as I Googled and searched and tried to find somebody somewhere, I found a few people in a postpartum group, and somebody in there actually mentioned PMDD. And then I started looking and digging a little bit further, and we started a group. There was a couple of women from the group. We started our own group. It was PMDD Moms. And from there, you know, we started talking and supporting each other. You know, I call it the OG of the peer support programs, the original peer support program. And so myself and my co-founder, that's where we met. Yeah. And that was in 2013. We were both, our stories were similar in many ways. We were moms. We went through, you know, a lot of the same struggles, you know. And so we just kind of connected that way. There was a few of us, and we just were like, nobody's talking. Nobody's doing anything. We survived. We're warriors. We're still here. So, you know, we have to do something. So we decided to start a nonprofit, which is the internet. At the time, it was the National Association for Premenstrual Dysphoric Disorder. And, you know, 501c3 based out of the United States. We registered as Colorado because that's where my co-founder was living at the time. Myself, I live in Canada. And so we decided to register as an American nonprofit. And from there, you know, we just developed some programming. We found some clinicians that wanted to come and, you know, join our board. We created a board, a clinical advisory board, the peer support program. And just from there, it just started snowballing into a movement of, you know, so many people. And now we have, you know, over 100 countries that have utilized our services. We have, you know, patients from all over the globe. I've spoken to people in countries that I didn't even know were a thing, which is so cool to me, coming from this isolated little, you know, little community. I no longer live in that isolated little community, but I actually bought a globe because I thought it was so cool. And every time I talk to somebody, even talking to you today, is really cool to me because it's such a far distance. And, you know, you just realize the reach that social media and you know, talking to people that do some of this work, or, you know, can relate to you, you really realize around the world that you're not alone. And in time, you know, now we realize after doing a lot of work through the organization that there's 1 in 20 menstruators and assigned female at birth individuals that struggle with this. And there really needs to be people talking about this. This is big, and this is huge, and this affects people's everyday life. And we need to be talking more about this.
I agree. I love that you are a social media success story, because I have such a love hate with social media. And I think it's the influencer type culture that I struggle with so much, but the actual connection and finding other people with similar stories is so beneficial. And when you spoke, so much of what you said resonated with me. The binging, the eating disorders, just so much. And because I'm raising three daughters,
when they were young, like by 4 or 5, I started researching and Googling PMDD and found all of these different corners of the internet. And I knew I didn't want them to struggle the same way that I did. And I have a great upbringing. I am very suburban. I have both of my parents and my mom and my grandma are wonderful, but we never, ever discussed anything. You know, Emily Gilmore, the grandma. Yeah. Yes. It's very similar. Like Steffi, we don't talk about those things.
Yes.
And I didn't want that. And so even now my own girls are like, oh yeah, well, we don't talk about that in front of grandma. But that's not real. And in real life, we're not the same. And it was very frustrating for me as a mom, and I'm trying to like create a schedule and I'm trying to create things, and everything I keep finding, it's just like eating plans and exercise and like how to maintain all the things that women are supposed to maintain. They were all written for businessmen. I'm like, so this isn't applicable because on this Wednesday, my energy is super high and I'm slightly manic. But on that Wednesday, I sort of just want to become one with the couch. And I knew there was quote unquote nothing wrong with me and the women that I work with. There is nothing wrong with you. And it's just so refreshing that you have developed this team of actual for realsies doctors who validate me and other women instead of just kind of being virtually pat on the head and this kind of like, welcome to motherhood, welcome to your 40s. Mm-hmm. And I just thank you so much, Sandy, for not making me feel like I'm absolutely bonkers.
Oh, thank you for saying that. It's amazing. It really is, you know, and I'm kind of with you there. I have a love-hate relationship with the internet.
But the internet.
Yeah, and most people do, I guess, especially as a mom. I'm a mom of a daughter as well. And I think that has also given me motivation to push through this because I've seen her through some of her struggles. You know, there is a genetic link. There is a study that came out, I think it was in 2017, that does show a genetic link. So that kind of also ramped up why I wanted to continue to push forward, because I'm like, you know, although my mom didn't get a diagnosis of PMDD, now that I know so much about PMDD, I'm like, oh, this is textbook. Like, she went through so much and so many things happened, and I struggled as her daughter, you know, because I was the brunt of all those things, and I witnessed all those things. And then I grew up and I had my own struggles, and now I'm watching my teenage daughter who's, you know, going through some things and stuff. Thankfully, she's nowhere near anything that my mom and I ever were, but, you know, it's still there. But the pressure and the stress, and there's so much negativity to social media. However, there's so many beautiful things as well. I would not still be here without social media. You know, that's just the reality of it. I was alone. I was hiding in my closet and I was researching because I wanted to die. And I found people out there that were similar to me because I couldn't find anybody anywhere on the globe. I thought I was an anomaly. I thought, oh my God, I'm just this one crazy person and there's nobody out there like me. And to find some other people that were like me, and I would have never found that if I didn't have the internet. The internet was like a life-saving tool for me, and it really can be a life-saving tool. We have people every day that come to peer support, that utilize our services, that tell us, you know, I'm so grateful, or it's so good that you have these things, on and on and on. None of these things would be here without the internet. So I am extremely grateful that we were able to build such a community and such a following and such a movement, really, because we are really trudging forward. There was nothing, you know, when I started looking, there was nothing. And now in 2013, it was put into the DSM-5, which is like that's the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Psychological Disorders. That's like the Bible of many doctors and psychiatrists and psychologists. And it wasn't even in there until 2013, the ICD-11, which is the International Classification of Diseases through the World Health Organization. PMDD was not put in there until 2019. Like, we're into 2024 now. So in all reality, you know, years ago, there was absolutely nothing. It wasn't even talked about. And now here we are, and look at the growth that has happened just since then. Yeah. We're into 2024, and now it's recognized by some of these, you know, huge things, like the World Health Organization finally recognized it. And that, you know, those are some really huge accomplishments for PMDD.
It's really interesting to know this timeline. So I'm trying to do the mathing of, so I told my doctor, this is what I have. I want to try some things. And so I guess that was probably 2018-ish, 2017, 2018-ish. Wow, Sandy, that's pretty phenomenal. And I'm in a pretty like legit-y area. We're in between UCSF and Stanford. So I mean, people are pretty well educated here, but yeah. I did have to advocate for myself and go in armed with that sort of, this is what is going to happen. I've done all of the things that you've told me I should do. I'm a very good student. I have lots of A's and gold stars. And yes, I take magnesium, but I want to, I want to try this other hashtag yay for magnesium. I have really good bowels now. So that's good. Okay.
When it comes right down to it, we all just want to climb into bed each night, feeling calm, content, and at peace. We want to know that we were able to keep all the balls in the air and were productive without neglecting our own needs and wants. I know. I get it. That is why I recorded a free masterclass on the 10 things happy, successful people do each and every day, and I'd love for you to join us. Learn simple and practical tips to reclaim the sanity and joy in your home and family at stephanieoday.com/masterclass.
All right. So to be a focused business lady, I do have 5 questions. And so we've touched upon them. I asked my own Slow Down Society Facebook group, and then I did check in with the Reddit. Reddit, if you are listening and you haven't discovered the PMDD subreddit, that's how I found Sandy. That is a wealth of information. So Sandy's website is IAPMD.org, and we will absolutely link to everything in the show notes. But the subreddit, what I like about Reddit is it's sort of like the olden days of the internet, and you're not trying to gain followers, you're not trying to get likes, you're actually just connecting with other humans. Yes, there's bad apples and trolls, but stay away from them. But it is a wealth of information. So I do have a list of 5 questions, and then most of them, a lot of them we've organically touched on just now, but to be technical, if you think you have PMDD, are there some telltale classic symptoms you should look for?
Oh, absolutely. So struggling, you know, probably within 7 days. So your luteal phase, so 7 days prior. And then, you know, when you start to bleed, when you get to that point where you're bleeding and you start to notice your symptoms subsiding, it's really, you know, close to a telltale sign that it is a huge possibility. If you're having debilitating symptoms like suicidal ideation, self-harm, you know, some physical symptoms, you know, if you can think of PMS on steroids or PMS times 1,000 or something like that, like just to the point where you can't get up or you don't want to get up, or you can't go through the daily living activities, which you should be able to still go through, then you would want to certainly consider PMDD as being an option. And PMDD is not, it's not PMS. It's very different because it is a sensitivity to the rise and fall of your hormones. So it's not a hormone imbalance. It is a sensitivity. So your body is reacting to the fluctuations of the hormones. And so it is quite different than PMS. It's not just about symptoms. And, you know, you'll find yourself becoming ultra sensitive to many things. You might notice yourself finding sound, lights, you know, some of these things a lot more sensitive. And you know, other physical symptoms might be really ramped up. So those are some things to definitely consider. We have a great self-screening tool on the website that people can use for free. And it kind of talks about the sum of the symptoms. You can go in and when you go through it at the end, it gives you your results and it gives you, you know, kind of shows you where you fit on the spectrum somewhere between PMS and severe PMDD. So it's a great tool. It's a great place to start. And again, that can be found on the website. And a lot of people like to start there. Tracking your symptoms is extremely important. And in order to get an actual diagnosis, they want to see the data from at least 2 months. Most clinicians do. So there's a lot of really excellent tracking tools on the website as well. And again, we can link to that and share those as well.
Is it dorky if I have approximately 30 years of data?
No, not at all. I'm sure I probably do too.
So, you know, I go back through my old journals. I'm like, oh, okay. 14-year-old Steph was really intuitive.
Right. I know. And yeah, I see some things too. And I actually found a diary from I was young and I was like, oh, this makes so much sense now. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't know back then. We had no idea, but now here we are and we know too much now. You know, we're going the opposite way. We know so much. And
yeah, it's interesting. I was talking to my husband, who's an engineer, before we hit record, and I said, the problem is we, and I'm speaking for myself, so I don't want to generalize and throw you in there, but we were raised with this sort of feminist wave of anything a man can do, we can do. And so a lot of it we dismissed or shoved down because we didn't want to be anti-feminist, at least for me.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not something we could talk about. And it's such a taboo, stigmatized topic. You know, it kills me because I think back to when I was in junior high and stuff, and, you know, that's kind of the age-ish when we all started getting our periods and we were hiding everything and you didn't talk about it and you didn't tell anybody. And then, you know, I watched my daughter go to junior high and same thing, she's hiding things and she's scared to go buy the sanitary pads and on and on. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is so many years later and we're still hiding this stuff. Over half the population menstruate. Why can't we talk about it? Why is it a stigmatized thing? Like it's nobody's fault biologically. This is the way the world is. You know, people wouldn't be here without us. And that's just the reality of it. And yeah, there are some things that men can do that women can't do and vice versa as well, you know, but it's just, we're biologically different. And yeah, it's just these stigmatized things should not be.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed. So we did touch upon question two in your first answer is there's a link between PMDD and hormone imbalance. And I liked what you said about kind of the sensitivity. So for me, I can feel estrogen rising and falling. And then for me, I linked my severe morning sickness to hormone fluctuations. Does that sound right? Even though I am most deaf, not a doctor in any sense of the imagination.
Yes. And me neither. But however, I've learned a lot over time that, it's a suspected hormone sensitivity. It has nothing really to do. It's not a hormone imbalance necessarily. It's a severe negative reaction to the natural rise and fall of estrogen and progesterone during the luteal phase of the menstrual cycle. So, you know, like some of us are just really hypersensitive to some things. And it doesn't mean that, you know, some of the treatment options are not going to work or, you know, some things aren't going to work for you. We are sensitive to hormones. However, many of us are very different. So for example, you know, I'm progesterone intolerant, so I can't tolerate progesterone. I can't take progesterone. Mm. And I had to remove that from my system in order to be able to, I call it to survive basically, but you might be fine with progesterone. It doesn't mean that you don't have PMDD. It just means that, you know, we have different realities when it comes to what our bodies are reacting to. Estrogen and progesterone seem to be, you know, the ones that affect women and assign female at birth individuals a lot more, which makes sense. However, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that you do or do not have PMDD. It's just people react differently. You know, and that's kind of been a little bit of a controversial issue with us sometimes as well. We've have had a lot of people coming, especially where the, you know, the there's new guidelines that came out for the Association of Gynecologists and Obstetrics ACOCG. So I did that backwards.
No, you did great.
So, you know, there's new guidelines that came out. We actually have a new ebook coming out in April, which is PMD Awareness Month, that is going to have a lot of information on this as well.
This episode is then airing at the beginning. PMDD Awareness Month. That's awesome. Is there a color? Do I need to wear a color?
It's teal. Teal is the color of all things ovaries. So for ovarian cancer, cervical cancer, PMDD, you know, anything that's related to the ovaries and the reproductive mental health system, all things teal. So we will be having a lot of events, and we'll have stuff up on the website and stuff like that as well. But a lot of new things coming out. So a lot of controversy around, you know, I'm sensitive to estrogen, I'm sensitive to progesterone, blah, blah, blah. Well, everybody reacts differently. And we have to realize that, you know, there's other hormones in the body as well. Those aren't the only ones. There's cortisol. So people react to cortisol, and people also talk about, you know, they can feel, some people can actually feel some of those things. And again, like you said, we are not, definitely not doctors. We're just people that are speaking from experience and the things that we've learned as we go, especially through the organization. You know, I think I've learned so much, and I'm very grateful for all the information and all the wonderful clinicians, volunteers, my board of directors, et cetera. Cause yeah, this is, you know, like we said, this has been life-saving and for many people. So
if you have PMDD, does that automatically mean that menopause and perimenopause are going to be difficult for you?
I wouldn't necessarily say that. It is shown that most sufferers do tend to get worse. And I think that, you know, one of the clinicians made a statement once in one of the webinars that they were doing, that perimenopausal individuals is the highest population of people that struggle with PMDD. And it is because the hormones are fluctuating even more. You know, we're going into that change of life. And we see, as you know, different studies and things are being done, which it's still so understudied and we need so much more research, but it has started, you know, and it's been in the progress. But, you know, we see that each huge life events that alter hormones tend to worsen things, which really makes sense. You know, childbirth, abortion, birth control pills, losing and gaining weight, you know, anything that alters, you know, the hormones in your body tends to ramp things up. So obviously perimenopausal, you know, you're going through the change, your hormones are all over the place, your period is not regular. So it's really hard to detect, you know, when you are going to be well or unwell. And sometimes for some people, it feels like they're unwell all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's why sometimes, you know, they opt for chemical menopause or even surgical menopause to relieve themselves from their symptoms.
Yeah. I learned through my PMDD research that that actual excess body fat can mimic in your body estrogen. And that was fascinating for me to learn that. And I'm only 5 feet. So for me, a fluctuation of 5 pounds, I actually truly feel different. And again, I thought I was nuts. And through reading the information, validated that, one, I wasn't nuts, and two, that excess at times body fat can in some mimic estrogen.
Yeah. And I'm hoping, we've actually had a few people come to us recently that were talking about, you know, like blood sugar issues and things like that. Like just so many things can alter, and just so hopeful that we're going to get more research around that so that we can actually have the evidence so that we can have that for the community and be able to just continue to move forward and find out more. There's so much that needs to be learned. And, you know, this isn't necessarily a new disorder, but in the realm of research and clinicians and being recognized as an actual disorder, this is really a lot newer. So it is, like I said, it is getting there, and we're really excited with, you know, some new research that is going on right now, and hopefully that will continue to grow, and we will be able to find out more and just, you know, keep pushing this forward and see where we get to.
Has the research backed up the anecdotal evidence that alcohol seems to exacerbate symptoms?
You know what, there's no actual huge research. There is a study being done right now on that, and we haven't, we haven't received any results or anything around that, but that is something that needs more work as well. That and so many other things. I mean, I have a running list here, and I know the clinicians do, and we're constantly looking for grant opportunities and other opportunities to be able to, you know, partner with different labs and different researchers around the globe, and hopefully be able to, you know, research that and research so many other things, because again, it's just the research is just not there, and we need the evidence in order to be able to, you know, make more informed decisions when it comes to the types of treatments that will work for people.
What about a link between PMDD and ADHD or other neurodivergencies?
Very, very little. Yeah. And that's,
no, it's interesting because anecdotally, yeah, like we're all talking amongst ourselves, but
absolutely. We see it in Reddit. We see it in Inspire. We see it in, you know, the Facebook groups. There's groups everywhere. And so much talk about, you know, the issues with chemicals and, you know, substance use disorders, issues with autism, ADHD, neurodivergence, and, you know, so many other things. And there's just not a lot of research there for us to be able to say, you know, oh, you know, this much or this percentage or whatever. It's just, there's just not enough there yet. So again, we're really trying hard to push the needle forward and try to see if we can get more of this so that, you know, people want to be informed, they want to know, and they want to know how to fix themselves or at least try to feel better, you know, because as you know, and as I know, like there's some days, like you said, we've lost years of our lives. We've lost so much time, and we don't want our daughters and other people's daughters and other individuals out there to be struggling and go through some of the things that we went through. So hopefully in time we will continue to get there. But yeah, we're not being quiet, and we're really pushing and advocating for further research and so many other things. Cause you know, there are in all reality, there's very few studies being done around the globe. Yeah. And education and awareness is really still needed. It is a lot better than it's ever been. And hopefully it will continue to grow, yeah, and continue to get better because it's really needed.
Yeah. It's interesting. So I just rewatched the Barbie movie over the weekend, and it just bugs me how much research and money and pharmaceuticals are for men and men's ailments, or I'm going to use air quote ailments, and how they need to fix all of the things. And it's just so sexist, and depending on my mood, it really truly irritates me. And I get all riled up. And then at the other time I'm like, well, no kidding. Yep. No kidding. Well, it's always
I used to always pride myself on being very open-minded and very, you know, friendly and all these things, which I still do. However, I became really irritated when I found out that Viagra was covered in some places and birth control was not. And I know birth control is a huge controversy. However, for some people, it's a life-saving medication that is needed. And, you know, it is a very sexist, patriarchal type attitude, and it is very disheartening for people when it comes to things that they need to help them function every day, and they can't access it, or they can't afford it, or they can't get it. And there's other medications that, such as Viagra, that is a male dominated medication, you know. And I try not to speak out much on that, but when that is one that I don't mind saying a little bit about, because, you know, birth control and is needed for chemical menopause. Yeah. It's needed for, you know, it's needed for some people to be able to get through each month. And if they can't have it or get it, it's just, you know, that to me, that just doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. So, and not even with the birth control, but even menstrual supplies, the fact that these little girls are needing to scrounge money to go into Target to buy themselves, like, it's completely and totally inappropriate. Thankfully, we are much better now. And usually schools have things for free and just take them. there's plenty of money in education. So if you are in a school right now and there's a stack of 20 pads, take all 20 pads. Just do it. It's fine. No one is going to shame you. No one will shame you.
And there's definitely no shame. This is biologically needed. You know, we shouldn't have to have people that can't afford pads or can't afford things that they have no choice but to use. We're biologically created this way. It is not our fault that we menstruate, you know, and it's a reality. Period poverty should not be people not being able to access the medications or, you know, pads and the things that are needed. It's in this day and age, this just should not be. I agree with you totally.
Yeah. Sandy, I went through all my questions. I think you are amazing and phenomenal. And I'm so grateful that you found a need. And instead of just sitting and hemming and hawing, you did something about it. And it's very inspirational and immensely helpful.
Thank you so much. And it's definitely not just me. I have a whole team of people that are absolutely incredible volunteers. We would not be here without volunteers. I have so many incredible volunteers that have dedicated their time, and, you know, we're always looking for volunteers. There's always people joining the mission, and, you know, and having this opportunity to speak with you and speak with other people and be able to continue to do this is just, this is what keeps us going and keeps us motivated to keep this work going. So, you know, and this is how things get done. People need to hear about it. And if we don't talk about it, then nothing's ever going to change. So, you know, we have to be the change. And so that's kind of what we're doing and what we're trying to do. So keep moving forward and keep marching forward. So we're not planning on going anywhere anytime soon. And services are there and we're trying to improve them all the time. And like I said, that the ebook with the treatment guidelines mm-hmm. and some other really cool things are coming out in April. April's going to be a really big month. So I'm excited that this is airing in April.
Yeah, this will air actually. And then Taylor is my social media person. So we'll make sure, not social media, I apologize, podcast editor, but we will make sure that we put all of the links in the show notes. We will wear teal and thank you. Thank you so much, Sandy, for being
thank you,
here.
Stephanie.
Thank you, Slow Down Society, for hanging out with me and for just spending so much time and for being so open and willing to learn new things. If you've got any questions, hit me up. I will get back to you. I'm a real person, steph@stephanieoday.com. And I will see you again next week. Do you have a slow living story to share? Leave me a voicemail at stephanieoday.com/podcast with any questions, comments, feedback, or testimonials, and I will be sure to include it in an upcoming episode. Also, if you found value in this episode, please share it with your family and friends and subscribe through your favorite podcast provider. The more you share, comment, and leave positive reviews, the more people we can reach and share the slow living lifestyle and messaging. Thank you, Slow Down Society, and have an absolutely wonderful day.